But why is it important to get an insurance checkup, for want of a better word, post renovations?
Yeah, well, when the worst happens, you don't want to be disappointed at claims time, do you? So a little bit of effort before you get your renovations underway, or a little bit of effort after you've completed your renovations, just to make sure that, you know, the biggest asset that most of us own, our home, is adequately insured, is a good investment in time. So, you know, we know we're out there knocking down walls and building decks and doing our bathrooms and kitchen. You just want to make sure that once you've done that, that you do have the right level of cover in place.
Is it simply the fact that you look over it? I mean, you don't think about it, because some of these renovations, they are not cheap, are they? When you're talking about a bathroom renovation now, or a deck, or a kitchen, it's big money.
Yeah, they're not cheap, and they're not getting cheaper. So you want to make sure that you do get that right. You know, for example, if you're going to spend $60,000 on you know, renovating your kitchen or your bathroom, you want to make sure that if the next week and your place burns down, you know, it does happen, that you've got that covered. So you're either going to build back smaller, or you're not going to have that great home that you had before.
Yeah. Critics might argue, of course, Wayne, you know, obviously, you're an insurance company. Of course you'd suggest upgrading your policy.
Yeah, I know. I thought you might ask me that question. Yep. But for me, it's like, you just, you know, we do see these claims from time to time. You know, the tenant that walked away from the cooking, the laptop charger that was left on the bed, and the house is burnt down. So we would much rather help people prevent. But if it does happen, you want to be not disappointed at claims time. So, like I say, if you were going to get $100,000 for 30 minutes of work, would you do it? Of course you would. And that just means making sure that you've got the right sum insured for you, for your property. Nobody knows your property like you, and there's some great tools available for you just to run it through a calculator and make sure you've got it right.
Okay.
If you don't have it right, or you're not sure, just give your insurer a ring and we're ready to help.
I mean, there's been some harrowing stories, hasn't there, recently, of homes being lost, you know, through fire or whatever. Let's go to our panellist, Sarah. What do you make of this?
Oh, wow, interesting timing, because I've just had an insurance situation. In fact, it's not resolved yet.
Oh.
But the devil's always in the detail. So you've got to dot your I's and cross your T's.
Yeah.
In my context, it wasn't around post-renovation. It was actually around jewellery that was taken in a burglary, hence why I moved. So I'm having a discussion at the moment with the insurer, because the jewellery was down on the policy, and then there was a change, and just a general amount was down there. And because I didn't specify every single detail,
yes,
they just had a specific strict limit per item. So lesson learnt, but hopefully I can have a cordedo with them to see if there's a little bit of a shift. But yeah, you've just got to check your policy.
You've got to check
and just get into
their
cadence.
Absolutely,
always.
Sarah. Yeah, no, I've been through that as well. Check your policy. And there was a time too, Mark, when, you know, my whānau, we were actually, oh my goodness me, we are quite uninsured. We didn't really know, you know. What do you think about this?
Well, I have a love-hate relationship with insurance. Apologies for that, Wayne. But, I mean, it's kind of a necessary evil, I guess. You don't need it until you need it. And so it is good to have. But it's one of those costs that goes out of the bank account every month, and it's eye-watering. But actually, I'm interested by this, because unless you've got sort of cash to do a renovation, where that might cause a problem with insurance. But going from my own recent experience maybe 2 years ago doing a major reno on a property, the bank needed the insurance policy value increased and updated before they draw down the final part of the mortgage payment. So the banks are really onto this now too. So you've got to increase your mortgage cover, your insurance cover, to protect the bank's interest in the property.
Wayne?
Yeah, 100%. And, it doesn't take much effort. So if you're doing those renovations so make sure that you're talking to your insurer before you start. You really don't want to be going retrospectively and saying, hey, I took out the load-bearing wall, and hey, is this now covered? So have that conversation pre, and make sure you're doing the review post, and make sure that, you know, when you receive your renewal from your insurance company, that you just take a little bit of time to make sure that what you're covered for is adequate for your situation. A little bit of time invested now, a quick phone call or an online application may save you a whole lot of grief or disappointment, you know, down the road when the worst happens. It does happen. You know, we all think it's not going to happen to us, but the reality is, you know, it could be you that's next.
The other thing I've learned from experience too is you need to make sure that everything you're doing, if it needs consent, you get consent, because that can leave you in a bit of a situation where your insurance doesn't cover if you've added in an extra toilet or a hand basin or something without getting it done properly through council.
You just pick up the phone and talk to your insurer first around what it is that you're wanting to do. It is the biggest thing that we own. You know, it takes 15, 20 minutes of your time, and it's a lot of peace of mind. You know, for that little bit of effort, that the thing that you're about to get underway or the thing that you've actually just completed, yeah, we're sorted, you know, should something, you know, something down the track happen. Also bear in mind that, and we touched on this a moment ago, around some of the limitations that may be in place. So you also need to think about some of those limits within the policy, for example, around your retaining walls or your specialist features like your swimming pool, et cetera, making sure that you've got those things well understood by your by your insurer.
Good on you, Wayne. Thanks for the fair play to you. A bit of a surprise for you. We've got Mustang City lined up for you for that advice, so thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
That's coming up toward the end of the program. But nonetheless, Sarah, the point that came out for me of that is that you do never know when or what happens in a home. And I hope, not crossing the line in saying this, but about a couple of months ago, we noticed in our home, outside power box, and there was smoke and electrical fumes coming out of the power box. I got a phone call. I was at work. My wife said, "This is happening." She called the electrician and the fire service straight away, and the electrician was there within half an hour and said, "Very pleased you called us instantly. This was serious." Quite something. Mm-hmm. Could have been the home, you know, so you do never know, do you? No. 18 to 5, the panel, RNZ National. Now, tens of thousands of tumbles, trips, cuts, slips happened from day one of lockdown, August the 18th till December the 2nd, and ACC says many of the events were completely avoidable. How we injured ourselves in lockdown, how 113,900 organisers hurt themselves during these 107 days, more than 90% of accidents were preventable, and almost all, we understand, are predictable. Now, ACC provided the New Zealand Herald with a list of the 11 most dangerous activities which drew the highest number of claims when the city's residents were so confined to quarters. And I'd love to hear from you. Did you injure yourself? Text us 2101. So to discuss this a bit more is James Whittaker, ACC's Injury Prevention Program Leader. Kia ora, James.
Hey, kia ora. How are you?
Well, here's a common one. So right at the top of the show, we get someone saying, let me find it. I broke my toe during lockdown trying to get the art of French cooking down off the top shelf to make a souffle. Oh, so this person breaks their toe, going to the top shelf. Apparently, that's really common.
Yeah. A lot of people take a bit of a shortcut when it comes to reaching for things. So instead of being bothered to find their stepladder, they'll just grab whatever's nearest and kind of stand on that dodgy three-legged stool, overreach, and then, you know, accidents happen then. So, yeah, you know, we do say 90% of accidents are preventable, and that's well-researched. And, you know, if you think of your own injuries and that you've probably had with hindsight.
I sure have.
You know, with that hindsight, you can look back and go, oh, okay, this led to that led to that. So we've got to switch that around. So hindsight becomes foresight, if you know what I mean.
But what's clear is we injure ourselves in a huge range of ways, in a setting that is so familiar to us, our house, it doesn't make sense.
Well, in a way, it does make sense. In our homes, there's often a lot going on. There's many people around and lots of things in them. And because we are so used to the environment, we might, you know, not have our wits about us all the time. We might kind of not be looking out for potential risks because we're overly comfortable there, you know? So it does pay, no matter what you're doing, to actually slow things down a bit, think about, you know, the risks, and then do it safely. And then you can keep on doing those things again and again and again.
Okay, Sarah?
Well, I did the attitude to risk test actually on the AMI yeah. site and discovered yeah. that I'm a nurturer. And yeah. that makes sense because I'm all about the collective impact. You know, if I yeah. get injured, it affects a whole lot of other people. So definitely. I'm quite cautious, very cautious yeah. around ladders yeah. and things of that
Are
nature.
You? Yeah.
Yes. That's
so you good. Take that.
And I've had a few ladders yeah. in my life as of late because I've moved and have to take down light fittings and whatnot. So, yeah, it's a great quiz.
You're so right. And that quiz is there on the ACC website. You just go to have a hymn on the homepage. But you're right. You know, when we do get injured, it doesn't just affect us. It affects our friends, our family, workmates or teammates who rely on us, you know, and the list goes on, you know, and it's not cool.
Mark?
I must admit, I'm actually possibly one of your stats from the past. yep. I was sort of shocked to see 54 people injured through mowing lawns. And I'm always astonished when you see people in 2021, 2022, whatever, still mowing their lawns in their jandals. It's quite staggering. Just a quick question on that, James. How does this 107-day period of lockdown compare to a regular 107-day period?
Yeah, I'm really, really stoked you brought that up. To give it some context, you know, 113,000 injuries, that's not a good thing. That's still really sad, and there's a lot of trauma, and it's also a pain. If you've just got a minor injury, it's still really annoying. But that actually is significantly lower than the same period of time in 2020 and 2019. In fact, in 2019, during that same window of time, there were over 200,000 injuries, so almost double. So my theory, and others here at ACC actually believe it too, is that because people had that time on their hands, things slowed down a little bit, and you didn't feel as rushed. So when you were going about whatever you were doing, you did have that opportunity to have a bit of a hum, think about it, and then go about it safely. Whereas when we all rush back to the other activities and those other settings and everything, you know, we might rush into it, we might get a bit overexcited, or we might have a whole lot of pressure on us to do it quickly. And it's when we take those shortcuts that injuries often happen.
Really nice to have you on, James. I appreciate your time. That is James Whittaker there, ACC's Injury Prevention Program Leader, saying that 90% of accidents were preventable and almost all predictable. That online thing, Sarah, that sounds interesting. Can you tell us that again? Where is it?
It's on the acc.co.nz. And if you have if you Google about have a hymn, HMM, you go onto a page and it talks about attitudes to risk. So, I did it at the quiz, and I thought that was very aligned.
Yeah, interesting. Regarding a couple of texts here, regarding swimming, an unfamiliar harbour. Oh dear. With my 4-year-old clinging to my neck, helping us, unquote, 50 metres from the deep end of the jetty, choppy waves suddenly came up in my face. Between gasps for air, I urgently asked him to really help and pray too. So grateful we made it. I clung to the barnacled pile, recovering before I could climb out, says Jen. And yes, regarding insurance, here's one about the insurance story. Kia ora, Wallace. Having recently moved back into my fully repaired, significantly fire damaged home, that insurance guy is right. Get your insurance sorted. Because if you suffer a major loss insurance, it's your lifeline. Thanks very much for your feedback this afternoon. I really appreciate it. 10 to 5, the panel, RNZ National, Sarah Sparks and Mark Knopf-Thomas with me this afternoon. Now, dog owners are being urged to be vigilant and look out for signs of the highly contagious canine parvovirus. It's been dubbed a puppy-killing outbreak by Stuff, with the SPCA warning it's the worst outbreak Tamaki Makaurau has seen in 20 years, and quote-unquote, the bodies are piling up. So, look, another bit of a sobering message, but I wanted to get this message across because it is so important, because if you have a puppy, you don't want this to happen. So with us to discuss this is SPCA's Senior Inspector, Georgina Higgins. Kia ora, Georgina.
Kia ora, Wallace. Thank you for having me on.
Good to have your
message for
us. Well, exactly. So let's get this message out. What is parvovirus?
Parvovirus is an extremely contagious virus that just affects dogs and puppies, and it attacks the cells in their digestive system. We're seeing a really serious outbreak in Auckland that's centred in South Auckland and spread into Central and West Auckland, and we're also seeing an outbreak in Christchurch and Northland. Puppies are particularly at risk due to their immune system immaturity, and their cases can get very severe very fast.
How do they get it?
They catch it from primarily other dogs and from environments that other dogs have been in. So it can live in the environment for years. And so unvaccinated animals can pick it up either from direct contact from the environment, or actually we can carry it on our bodies and our clothes and shoes.
Oh, goodness. How bad has it been this year? How often are you seeing cases, Georgina?
I'm dealing with a case every day. I have colleagues who have been with the SPCA for 20 years who haven't seen it this bad.
Oh, God.
Oh, dear. I, for one, as a dog lover, really a little bit concerned about this. Let's jump into our panel. Mark, you have a dog, don't you?
I do have a dog, Zico, who's my little 10-year-old golden cocker spaniel and my constant companion. He's just the coolest dude. And it's also a very timely reminder, so thank you, Georgina. I need to book in his annual jabs anyway. So, but yeah, we had a problem with him last year, and it gets very expensive very quickly with a dog. So yeah, it's a really very timely reminder to all of us to get our dog sorted out.
Can I ask, Mark, was it around parvovirus?
No. It was a gastric. He eats he overeats quite badly, and he wolfs food down. He had to go to the emergency clinic in Point Chev at Unitech to get sorted out of the vet.
Sorry, Georgina, you were saying?
Mark, I'm really pleased to hear you're getting him booked in. That's the one thing we're really strongly pushing, is that people get booked in if they're coming up due. There is a bit of a delay on getting vet appointments in Auckland in particular at the moment, so please book early before your due date.
Mm. Sarah?
Well, it sounds to me like an opportunity for a mobile vet to go to some of those areas where there are owners, the dog parks, the dog beaches, you know, Mangakeke, One Tree Hill in the weekend, there's just dog walkers galore, to remind those that haven't actually vaccinated their puppies or their dogs that they need to get it done. I had a look online at what the cost is. And, you know, that's when you're a pet owner, you've got to take responsibility for looking after your four-legged furry friend. And I think that the cost for three rounds is around $200 for puppies. And then an annual jab, it's around $100, $105. So people have got to bear that in mind before they actually get a dog. Otherwise, it's just terribly cruel. But, yeah, I think there's an opportunity for, you know, commercial opportunity and community opportunity for someone to do that.
Yeah.
Or a collective of vets pulling together, seeing it's such a terrible outbreak.
Indeed, yeah. Hey, so on that, Georgina, how quickly do you need to act to get your puppy medical treatment? And I must ask, what signs should those with puppies be looking for? What's the incubation period?
I'm not sure on the incubation period, but the first signs you're going to see are going to be maybe a lack of appetite, some diarrhea or vomiting, a bit of lethargy, or potentially blood in the feces. And if you have a dog that isn't fully vaccinated and is showing any of those symptoms, please get veterinary assessment as soon as possible. We see these animals die within 24 to 48 hours from the first onset of a symptom. It's very, very severe, particularly in younger animals.
It'll be heartbreaking for you and the team as well, or those working alongside the dogs, to see these dogs go down so quickly with their owners there too, huh?
It's difficult, and the families go through such a traumatic experience, particularly those who didn't know about this virus in advance, to see a healthy animal who might be facing a euthanasia decision in the evening. Our vets are extraordinarily overloaded at the moment. I loved Sarah's idea, but it's probably not practical for the industry at the moment. But hey, look, the community can get behind this, spread the word, talk to all the dog owners you know. Let's get it out there and see if we can stop them getting sick.
Sure. That is Georgina Higgins, the SPCA Senior Inspector. That is the news about this new highly contagious canine disease. It's called parvovirus. Look it up if you want to, and inform yourself more if you do have a puppy there, particularly around Auckland or indeed Canterbury, Northland as well. It's 5 to 5. You're on the panel, RNZ National. We have Sarah Sparks with us and Mark Nov Thomas. Finally, should Aotearoa overhaul the baby name rules? That's what opinion columnist Dave Armstrong reckons. He's written an opinion piece for Stuff, and he writes that the Department of Internal Affairs needs to improve the way it classifies Māori names. Also, chill out over names that might offend the kings, queens and princes at Buckingham Palace. Quote, unquote, babies called king or princess are hardly going to lead to the downfall of the British monarchy. So I thought I'd go around the panel on this one. These rules are there for a reason, aren't they, Sarah?
Yes, but I agree they need to be reviewed, and particularly around Māori names, and there needs to be pangta whenua involved in that from a whakapapa point of view. And I do know that overseas, like I've got friends that have played rugby in France, and they've got very strict rules around using the name Louis, for example. So I can see from a titled point of view, how it possibly is filtered into New Zealand. But yeah, I also think too, we're in the age now where we want to be a bit more self-determining and take self-responsibility and self-regulate. So I think that it does need some easing, but it needs more input from community and definitely pangta whenua if you're talking about Māori names.
Mm. What do you reckon, Mark? And are you happy with your name, Mark?
Well, my brother named me, apparently, actually, so I blame him.
How did that happen?
I don't know. He probably grunted the word Mark, and that was sort of got taken. Oh, that's his name. Go, yeah, everyone celebrate. But no, I think as a rule of thumb, it's always best to consider the impact of a name on a child as an adult. So what might seem like quite cool and quirky at the time for a parent actually might not age very well. I'm quite open-minded about liberalising names generally, but I actually wondered, in New Zealand, if you can call a child Jesus, because Jesus is possibly one of the most common names for a boy in Spain and lots of South America. So to Sarah's point, I think some countries are quite strict on what can and can't be used, and others may be quite liberal.
Yeah. Sarah, have you ever thought of changing your name? Are you just comfortable with your name?
Well, I've changed my surname because I was married once, and I've gone back to my maiden name. But no, I'm very grateful that I was called Sarah because my father was after Virginia. But thank goodness my mother won that argument.
Nice one, Mark. If you were, it sounds like you are actually a little bit unhappy with your name, Mark, not Thomas, not the North Thomas, but the Mark. If you were to change your name, what you could do, because Mark's quite common, eh? What would you change it to?
I probably would have liked a Welsh name because I'm Welsh by birth, and having a traditional Welsh name would have been quite cool.
Such as?
Oh God, I don't. Could be lots of them. I don't know. Owen's a good name, or I can't even think of one off the top of my head. But
that's my brother's name. That's my brother's name. From now on the panel, you will be Owen North Thomas. I love it. That is who you will be, whether you like it or not. Lovely. Owen, Sarah, thank you for your time. Here's a little bit of Mustang Sally. I'm Wallace Chapin. Back tomorrow, 3:45. Till then.